And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast. It is 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is September 19, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with the Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to check in with what happened in New York City and how is the world is going to plan to set the record straight in the Syrian truce. We are going to start with giving everybody a warm regards from the Holy Land to all those people frightened and attacked in New York City. It's not easy to be under attack, and the world is keep on going, you know, blank and not knowing what to do in this kind of challenge that is a little different from going all out on war. It's an attack on civilization as we know it. And it started 2001 when the World Trade Center went, and we're still in September, and you know the grief of that moment still with us. And we know the sacrifice that was made in New York City, and a city that represents liberty with a lady of liberty there, and represent all what's the dream. The American dreams represent with the freedom, the action, the livelihood, the colors, the music, the fashion. Everything is in New York City, and they decided to come on and attack it again. Little, but it's still painful. Let's listen to that.
Boy, oh boy. It's a movement like they haven't seen before. I must tell you that just before I got off the plane, a bomb went off in New York, and nobody knows exactly what's going on. But, boy, we are living in a time. We better get very tough, folks. We better get very, very tough. Just happened. So we'll find out. But it's a terrible thing that's going on in our world and in our country. And we are going to get tough and smart and vigilant, and we're going to end it. We're going to end it. So we'll see what it is. We'll see what it is.
I want to get now to Corey Johnson, who's a New York City councilman. Corey, you are on the scene. What can you tell us? What do you know?
I'm at the corner of 23rd Street and 6th Avenue. Your initial reports are what I'm hearing as well. It happened outside the Association for the Blind. For folks that aren't familiar with the neighborhood, 23rd Street is a major thoroughfare, as you said, that runs east to west, and it's very busy on a warm Saturday night in New York City. It's sandwiched between two subway lines, the PATH train and the S&M lines at 23rd and 6th, and the 1 train at 23rd and 7th. There are helicopters overhead, and what we're hearing is they're not saying it's a bomb yet. There are no confirmed reports of that, but the NYPD bomb squad is here. The FBI is on the scene, as well as Homeland Security investigators.
Corey, if you can stand by, there are hundreds
and hundreds of law enforcement officials here on the scene.
Okay, Corey, just stand by just for a second. I don't want you to go anywhere. I just want to tell our viewers that this is new video that we are just getting into CNN, which shows the chaos on that scene. And you can see broken glass and debris on 23rd Street in Manhattan. And as Corey said, that is a major thoroughfare that runs east to west in the city in a very busy part of Manhattan. Corey, again, this is, as you said, the Association of the Blind, which is where you were. So describe to me what you're seeing. As we look, there's new video, and we're seeing, I mean, it looks pretty chaotic. What's going on where you are? Did you see any of the injured?
No, I didn't see any of the injured. What I'm seeing right now is I'm standing, you know, amongst law enforcement, but, of course, away from the scene so as not to interfere. And the whole block is shut down. The NYPD bomb squad vehicle is down on the block. There are, you know, two dozen fire trucks and ambulances that are here. And I believe the incoming police commissioner is on his way here. New York City's fire commissioner, Daniel Nigro, I saw on the scene. And I'm standing in front of people that are wearing FBI Joint Counterterrorism Task Force jackets. So, you know, there's a lot going on here, but we still don't know what it is. The initial reports say that it was in a dumpster, And I just read a piece online that said that a lot of windows were knocked out in the Associated for the Blind building. So that's what I'm seeing right now.
All right. We are back. That was a segment of CNN on the reporting of the bombing. Now, I know that it seems impossible to catch them, but the truth of the matter from the Israeli part of me that been there, done that, we can say, or I can say for a fact, that we need to go to a preventing measure. It means that it's not easy to always catch them on act. So you have to prevent it. It means that you have to be vigilant. When Donald Trump said vigilant, it means that you have to be careful. People have to waken up from their daily thing, and you have to get off your telephones in the street and start walking with your eyes wide open and seeing what everything is around you, if it's normal or not, and detect it. You need to come to the conclusion that it's up to you. It's not everybody, you know, the police cannot prevent it from happening. It can come and defend you if you need sometimes, but you need to be careful. Being careful is the act of the moment. And please just remember, it's your life. Don't let anybody tell you that somebody else will take care of you. You need to walk in with a, you know, with the consciousness that something is out there that try to scare us all. And if you are vigilant, you are stronger, you are predictable, you can see ahead of time. And while you're doing that, you know, check everything around you, and please. I remember the trick that always was saying when you are a little kid, don't try to kick any dumpster or kick any, you know, box, empty box in the street. Just remember, everything can explode in some way or another. And I'm not telling you to scare it you off. I'm just telling you, be vigilant, as Donald Trump said. Now, I know that Rudy Giuliani had a lot to say, and he's a specialist in this, so let's listen to what he had to say.
Live for us this morning. We'll get back to you with any breaking developments.
Thanks a lot, David. Joining us now is former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Mr. Mayor, it's great to see you.
Good to see you.
So Mayor de Blasio reassuring the city and the country, going out of his way to say this is not connected, he doesn't believe, to international terror. Do you think that's premature?
Thank you. Sure. How would he know? I mean, when you don't know who did it, how they did it, why they did it, I can't, unless he has a lot more information than it appears he has, it seems to me premature to say it is or it is not connected to international terrorism. To say it's a terrorist act is perfectly accurate. I mean, this could be domestic terrorism. This could be some form of lunatic terrorism. Mm-hmm. But a bomb, by definition, when you explode a bomb in a crowded area, that's an act of terrorism.
Yes.
Now the question becomes, is it connected to anything? Mm. And it would seem to me you need a little bit more investigating before, or a lot more investigating before you come to that conclusion. To tell the people of the city that there's no specific threat beyond this to the city, that's a good thing to do. I think you did the right thing there, because that calms people down. In other words, they're not receiving information that New York City's under attack. Mm. But given what happened, you have to pretend New York City's under attack. If you're law enforcement and you're the mayor,
right.
You have a bomb that went off, a device that may or may not be real, but you have to assume it is, that right nearby. You had another bomb that went off in New Jersey, and you had a terrorist act, where was it,
in Minnesota.
And in that case, clearly Islamic terrorism, because the guy was yelling Allah Akbar, unless they're going to call it workplace violence, like they did with Major Hassan. So you did have yesterday an Islamic terrorist attack on the United States in Minnesota. And then you have these three incidents. Are they connected? Hmm. I don't think anybody knows that right now. Do they constitute acts of terror? Absolutely.
Right. Well, you had Donald Trump tweeting out or saying very shortly after that it was, in fact, a bomb. Got a lot of criticism for that.
Why would he get criticism for that?
I think a lot of people say, you know, he's very quick to assume what happened.
Boy, that's a leader.
Other people are saying that's exactly what needs to happen.
He used the word bomb right. Before we knew for sure, but then within a couple of hours, Hillary Clinton called it a bomb.
Did the same thing.
I don't know. I wasn't with him yesterday. I've been with him actually pretty much every day. It just happened to be that I took a day off yesterday. maybe he had that information. I don't know.
He said he had been briefed, so.
Oh, yeah, well, then he probably had that information. I mean, it didn't take a genius to figure out it was a bomb. I mean, that
right.
I think I'd have come to that conclusion the moment I walked out of City Hall and headed there. Mm. I like a leader that steps up right away. And if I were to compare the two sound bites of him and her, my goodness, I much prefer a leader who gets up and says, we were attacked, it's not going to happen, we're going to stop it, and we're going to be tough, and we're going to be a lot tougher, as opposed to, we have to see, we have to tell, we're not sure, we have to wait. Sounds an awful lot like...
You certainly have two different styles, but
yeah.
Now it's all about
the
man.
I don't think it's two different styles. I think one's a leader and one's not. But.
2008, we had that 3 a.m. phone call. It was an ad that Hillary Clinton ran against Barack Obama,
right.
Saying he wasn't ready. How important should national security now be? I'm not just reacting to the last 24 hours. We had Orlando just a few short months ago.
You got to be ready at every moment. I was ready anytime I was mayor. You had my former police commissioner, Bernie Kerik, on, who I saw outside of reminding me of September 11 because we lived through September 11 together, almost died in the building we were in. He was very instrumental in helping us get out. You've got to be ready at every moment. I had all my clothes set right next to my bed from September, the evening of September 11 until the day I left office as mayor, just in case. Because I believe you lead from the front. I'm a sort of MacArthur Patton kind of leader, where you lead from the front. You're there, you tell the facts that you know, and you don't avoid things by trying to sound too euphemistic, because nobody will trust you when you try to sound too euphemistic.
That is true.
And to say it's Islamic terrorism is jumping too far. To say this was an act of terror is perfectly accurate. And to say that this is something that needs very close investigation, because, look, most good detectives, most good FBI agents, and most good assistant U.S. attorneys don't believe in coincidences. If you have a coincidence, that gives you a hypothesis. Now, it may prove there is no connection, but you got to start off with, it's awfully strange that you have these two things right near each other. Are they connected or not? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure they're working on that premise.
I want to ask you what happened in St. Cloud yesterday. So I grew up in a country where Minnesota was not known for terror, was known
right.
for politeness. Mm. What changed is you had massive refugee resettlement from Somalia there. These are people who are vetted, but you're seeing second-generation Somalis implicated in terror plots or attacks. What does this tell us about our refugee policy?
Maybe this is the playing out of what Jim Comey told us about when we were all rather shocked that there were about 1,000 or more of these investigations of radical Islamic terrorism all throughout the United States. I know President Obama and Mrs. Clinton won't use those words, radical Islamic terrorism, because they're playing some kind of a game, which I think is dangerous, by the way. I think it has implications in, like, the people in San Bernardino not turning in the information that they had that might have prevented it, because they feel like they're going to be seen as bigots. But what it tells us is that ISIS and related radical Islamic extremist groups have done a good job of penetrating. We know they've done a good job of penetrating Germany, France, and England, and they may have done a better job of penetrating the United States than we realize. I mean, we for sure had an act of Islamic terrorism yesterday.
Mm.
One for sure. The others, we don't know yet.
So now it's about the manhunt, figuring out who was behind what happened here in New York City.
Yeah, was it a madman? It reminds me of the first moments of September 11 when I was notified that a twin engine plane hit the Twin Towers, and I rushed down to see Bernie Kerik and all of my, and I, going through my head was, well, it's one of two things. It's a madman or it's a terrorist. And then when the second plane hit, I knew it was a terrorist attack. But it didn't take me, you know, well, we'll see and we'll try it.
Well,
that isn't the way you fight against an enemy like this. You've got to be decisive, you've got to be strong, and you've got to be tough.
So what are they doing now to figure out who it was?
Well, they're doing everything. And as several people said, you've got the best police department in the world doing it. Nobody knows more about how to investigate terrorism, the NYPD, than the NYPD. And, you know, consider the size of it. The FBI is 14,000. The NYPD is 36,000. Mm. This is the largest law enforcement organization in the United States and the one with the most expertise. And they've been training in this area for, you know, for 20 years.
When you talk about the best police force, Detective Brian O'Donnell, he was off duty outside Penn Station.
Look at that.
And you can see 70 stitches on his face because there was a crazed man with a meat cleaver who went after a police officer. He was off duty. I know his brother, Johnny O'Donnell. He was off duty and he was about to get on a train to go to a soccer game with his son. And he rushed up, tackled and punched this man with the cleaver. And as he fell to the ground, Detective Brian O'Donnell ran into the cleaver in his face. He broke his arm, 70 stitches. So we were talking about the bad guys, the terrorists. But the heart of this city right here, we've got a lot of good
people.
Well,
that's why we ultimately win this battle, because we are the good guys. Mm-hmm. And they are the bad guys, whether this was a individual nut or somebody connected to a particular terrorist organization. These are the bad guys, and we got a lot more good guys than bad guys.
It's so nice to hear someone use the term nut. Because you would be a nut if you did something like this.
Well,
and thank you for saying
that. And that happens sometimes. You know, we had situations where, when I was mayor, somebody would walk into an office who had been fired by the boss of the company, and they killed the poor secretary behind the desk. So you have, this could be an absolutely crazy act, or it could be an act connected to what happened in Minnesota and other places.
Right. It's back to BBS Radio, and we are with you. We were listening to Rudy Giuliani talking and thinking about what happened in New York City. Now, the question is, it's not about terrorism if it's colored, you know, by any religion, but it's colored by hate. Let's start dividing the people from the people, you know, that are fearful from God, from all religion, to the people that actually using God as an excuse to terrorize people. I know that the Muslim, you know, have so many terrorists that sometimes people segment them as terrorists as all, but it's not true. They need to push them out. It's about time they start working with us to eliminate the threat. And we have to start by talking to them, and those leaders that present a peaceful face and then they talk war. We have a very big event coming up in the United Nations this week in New York City, and all the world leaders are going to be there, and President Obama is going to speak about the future of the world, and I know Benjamin Netanyahu is going to be there, and I know that you know, Abbas, the Palestinian leader, is there, but the Palestinian leader is a guy that declared that if there is no perspective of something, Palestinian state, which, you know, it's their responsibility, there is going to be else. And once you have a leader that speak about violence as a result of something, I would claim that he belongs to a terrorist organization. It doesn't matter if you call it, you know, Afghan, like the guy that did the bombing in New York City and they're after him now, or is Iraqi, or is a Syrian, or is a Palestinian. If you use power of violence against civilian, against anybody, you actually acting up as a terrorist. Those terrorist organization needs to be outlawed by all means. And those leaders, Abu Mazen, that is in New York City now, talking that if there is something, he's gonna, you know, whip us out or something like that. Look, the, you know, it's not something that we need to tolerate. And please, please, anybody that start with saying and claiming that the division between the Palestinian issue and the terrorist issue, you know, on the ISIS, doesn't know what he's talking about. Because you know what President Bush used to say, you are with us or you're against us. And they are acting up, you know, in a way that all terrorists are the same for me. Now, there is a book that I found on the Wiley page. It's named The Colonial Present, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Iraq. It's by Derek Gregory. It was published in June 2004, and it's talking about the critics of the war on terror. So think about the Afghanistanian and its extension into Palestine, Iraq. Derek Gregory traced the long history of British and American involvement in the Middle East and show how the colonial power continued to cast long shadow over our own present. The idea that there is a difference between Palestinian attack, and I'm not using this excuse of the bombing in New York City to the stabbing today in Hebron, where in Jerusalem today two policemen were actually stabbed, and they are in very bad condition, and we're praying for their well-being. The girl at operation, you know, a lady that went to work and she come back, you know, she's in the hospital now. And you were saying that it's different? Anybody wants to say that, you know, the attack or bombing elsewhere, it's because it's in Israel, it's allowed, and because it's in the free outer European city, it's not allowed? I would say that he is hypocritic. You need to understand that the leaders of the free world need to speak at one voice of peaceful coexistence. And please don't tell us to shatter houses of anybody, Jewish one, because they are in a line of your doubtably, you know, magical map. It's not. We're leaving it all together. This is the fight that we all have with this extremist. And I'm telling you, many Arabs are great people. Not many. All of them are great. They have only a few that are went blank. They went bad. And we need to stop them, and they need to stop them, and they need to know that we are with them to stop them. Because you know that they're homegrown, you know where they are, you need to let us know. You need to cooperate with authority. If not, you participate in the same devastation. If you know about anybody who is having an act of violence around you, please do not hesitate ever to warn, because you are as accomplished as they are. And it's not a value that you learn only in the Bible. It's our freedom value. And we need to sustain it, because that's how we're going to become stronger and stronger. And if I say something this morning to you all in California that wake up, and in lunchtime in the East Coast, I want to say, courage, America. You're going to overcome it. Let's listen to some music, and we'll be back after that. Barbara Streisand, what a great song, Memories. I'm telling you, if there is somebody who recognizes, you know, Barbara Streisand is a New Yorker more than anything, it's me probably, because she is fantastic and she loved it, and I think that it was really worthy to connect it with what happened. So while we're going, you know, to send our love to New York City again and again and again, I want to start talking about what happened this Sunday in Russia when there was an election for parliament, and there was, of course, incredible vote, outstanding vote for the President Putin. And let's listen to it.
We halted the attack when we were informed by Russia that it was possible that we were striking Syrian regime military personnel and vehicles. We are investigating the incident. If we determine that we did indeed strike Syrian military personnel, that was not our intention. And we, of course, regret the loss of life. This said, even by Russia's standards, tonight's stunt, a stunt replete with moralism and grandstanding, is uniquely cynical and hypocritical. Since 2011, the Assad regime has been intentionally striking civilian targets with horrifying, predictable regularity. They have besieged civilian areas, prevented life-saving humanitarian aid from reaching people who are starving to death and dying of illnesses that could be treated with basic medicine, which is ripped out of trucks and pocketed by Syrian regime forces. And yet, in the face of none of these atrocities, has Russia expressed outrage, nor has it demanded investigations, nor has it ever called for a Saturday night emergency consultation in the Security Council, or a Monday day, or a Tuesday day, or a Wednesday day, Thursday day, Friday day, Saturday, Sunday, you name it. If there's a day of the week, they have never called an emergency consultation.
Having conducted this airstrike, the United States has violated two of its commitments. One is the commitment to cessation of hostilities, which the United States undertook together with us in February, and which we reconfirmed just a few days ago. And the other is the commitment the United States gave to the government of Syria when the United States started its air campaign 2 years ago. The United States promised to the Syrian government that their airstrikes are not going to affect the position of the Syrian armed forces. That did not put the United States fully in line with the international law because they did not receive the consent of the Syrian government, but the fact that the United States committed not to strike the position of the Syrian government created certain conditions for continued cooperation with the United States politically and on a number of practical aspects of the situation in Syria. It is quite significant and frankly suspicious that the United States chose to conduct this particular airstrike at this time. Why would all of a sudden the United States choose to help the Syrian armed forces defending Deir ez-Zor? After all, they did nothing when ISIL was advancing on Palmyra. ISIL made a 100-mile march without being attacked by the coalition. All of a sudden, the United States decides to come to the assistance of the Syrian armed forces defending Deir ez-Zor. It is quite significant, and I would suggest not accidental, that this happened just 2 days before the arrangements, Russian-American arrangement, were supposed to come into force.
As you say, the United States is a special partner for the United Kingdom, a long-standing ally and a close friend. We share the same values of freedom, openness and tolerance. We share intelligence and technology. Our troops train, fight and recuperate together.
All right. You know, guys, there is something that the Russian, you know, they had an election. We know that the party of the President Putin won and is going to be in power and empowered by his own government. That's why we want him to come closer to the American system with understanding that cooperation means that sometimes you can make a mistake. And the bombardment in a war zone is so easy to miss target. And please, let's not start with the blame game, because we cannot win it if not. We need to sustain the ceasefire and keep on going. Yes, mistakes have been made, but we need to feed those people. If you start stopping every time that somebody makes a oops, we are not going to finish with this war. Now you all in New York City coming together now, you better show a big, strong, devoted line of, you know, of in the sand to say, this is it for that war. We're going to turn it around. And of course, there are a few items that we forgot to mention. When you talk about the forces that are playing, and I know that the American position is acceptance of Assad right now until new things will come, I would say that we need to make a commission there to create some basic line of force and balance. And there are a lot of people who thinks that the Druze can play a really good role in stabilizing everything, because in the all fighting, there is no way that one side want to win and the other, you know, of course one side want to win, but the other one not accept it lost. So we need to take it out from the equation and put somebody else. You know, there are three of them. They have the rebels. You have the army of the Syrian army, which cooperate with the Druze. And you have the ISIS, of course, forces that everybody play with and fight with. And we need to decide which side is going to stabilize. And the resistance, of course, the movement of the rebels. So if you have the rebels sitting down and talking to the Druze, maybe they can come to a common denomination. I'm not sure that this is in the game. I'm not sure that it's in the play, but I know that you have this force of yours there that can make a difference. And sometimes we have to choose what is reasonable. My golly, there is so much to do, and we have more to listen to in the Syrian-Russian balance of power there.
Residents of Crimea are voting in Russian parliamentary elections for the first time since the peninsula was annexed from Ukraine in 2014. Moscow's move followed an internationally unrecognized vote on self-determination for the landmass. Russian state media reported turnout of over 80% for that vote, with more than 90% allegedly opting to break away from Ukraine. This Marine voted in Crimea on Sunday. He said he expects positive changes for the country. Another woman added, "We chose the best for us, for our country, for the next generation." In the run-up to Sunday's ballot, Kiev urged countries not to send election observers to Crimea and not to recognize results coming from there. It says any such missions will be considered criminal violations of Ukraine's borders. In Kiev, activists could be seen demonstrating in front of the Russian embassy. Some brought banners, such as this one, which reads...
All right, we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. We are listening to the fact that Crimea is actually voting in the Russian election now. Now, I was in a dentist office this week, and the dentist is from Ukraine, and I talked to him about Crimea. And he said Crimea was never Ukraine. It belongs to the Russian. One day, you know, the Russian president was probably feeling, happy or whatever. He gave it away. But the deal is that Russia took back what was theirs. And the fact that they're voting just show you and tells you that they feel it, you know, fill the consensus. And we need to get over that. But it doesn't mean that the Russian forces needs to be elsewhere. And that's something that the world needs to come to term and decide what they're going to do. I'm telling you, we have a ceasefire that can be sustained only if the U.S. and the Russian government will decide to play nice. And we all praying for that, because the balance of the world is right now in act. And I know that the Chinese feeling all and mighty right now, and they are willing to lead and sustain economic growth. I don't know if it's for the rest of the world or for them sake, but what I'm saying is if the Syrian truce will hold, we can all go back into the business of building the world again and keep on going, because there is a tomorrow after the party ends. Party, somebody else's party, but it's not our kind. It's enough with war. We've been through it, and millions of people have been dying, you know, from the first, second to the Second World War, and this world war, because everybody is involved in that, has been bleeding for 5-6 years. I don't know how the consensus of the world to let it be can exist, but I know that there are truckloads of goods that the United Nations is trying to bring to those people he needs, that needs to be sustained. And I know that they've been holding short of the border, and it's not something that you want to let it stay any longer. You need to make a go and start rolling those trucks load and decide that a new day is about to come for everybody. All right, guys. We've been around for some quite a time. I have to tell you that I've been today to incredible conference that the Israeli National Security made, which sustained all the stuff that the talks about security, of course, and the drones. What you can do to safeguard the world. And I know that with this technology, with this day's technology, we can actually create a new way of living that is much safer. And I know that the equipment exists, and there are a lot of talks about, putting some new area to the civilian aeronautics, which will prevent people, I don't know about the drone, but I'm saying people can be safer. We are not so blind spotted like we were before. It's not like they can surprise us anymore. We can have sensors. We can have stuff that can alert us. I know that there is so much around us that it's not being used yet because people are not aware of that. But being in a country which is a startup country, that is lacking resources, and let's say it clear, the fact of the matter is that the American government support Israel liberty, but support the Middle East balance of power, which it's a role that cooperation and partnership can make between the countries, makes everybody safer. Because the innovation and the world, is better when we all working hard to safeguard it. And, the deal that the memorandum of understanding that the American government made with Israel about the next 10 years of defense support is so essential, is so important, and is so appreciated. Because everybody wants to feel safer, and when you're working to it, you actually can accomplish it and make it better. But you make innovation for everybody, and I think that there are a few spots that we can actually show much more a vigorous cooperation, and there are so many people that can do that better than me, so I'm not going to try to tell you about it, but one day we might have the position to even talk to some of them. Anyway, it's almost, it's a quarter to the hour. And I know that there is some music that I want you to listen to. So let's listen to one more.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
Ice, ice, baby.
Ice, ice, baby.
A
ice is back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly, flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights.
All right, we're back. Ice Babies. My goodness gracious, that was a long time ago in California. I remember those days when that song hit whole record high. It was awesome. And a good beat, and it's still valid and still good in this world. Now, let's talk about some us, the world. We are the world because we are responsible for each other. And if you think that you can go away your funny ways or your golly ways and pretend to be excellent when all the world is actually aching, I'm not sure that you can last that long, because the world is connected and whatever goes around comes around, they say. And I remember it very clearly that we were all happy one day, and the next day it can, you know, 9/11 happened. So I'm saying we need to come to grip to the fact that the world is changing on us, and the children are actually exposed to so much these days. And I don't know, you see, it's even ringing. Sorry. The idea is that we have to come and be honest and truthful to each other and also to ourselves, because we are working together on this planet, and the planet is dissolving everything that we knew about that road. You know, when you have a blueprint that everything is okay, hey, be happy, talk nice, you're polite, you go to work, you work hard, everything works and it's all according to plan. But what happened? Things changed. There was a collapse of the economy in 2008. One day, everything just froze because there was no direction. But, okay, let's not say that we know why it happened, but it happened. It happened like the world happens all the time. It seems to go up and down, and, you know, and we say in the Jewish faith that there is descent always to get to a high level. You know, you're going down, take a deep breath, and you rise up. And only righteous people rises up. Because the bad one, the wicked, they drop because they think that it's over and they don't have faith. And the difference between the one that exists longer and actually succeed longer is the faith that they have. Think about people that have so much challenges, and you had the Olympics, you know, the people that handicapped Olympics just now to show you how capable people are, you know, with all the challenges. So now we have a challenge to redo ourselves. And I've been talking about it forever. And I know that there was an idea someplace that was planted in me many years ago. But when 9/11 happened in September, and I'm going there because it's like a vertical of power when it changes everything. And we need to change it back from the root. Anytime you have a problem, you need to solve it from the root. And what happened actually? We had a 9/11 happen, the collapse of the World Trade Center that froze all the economy of all the world, that suddenly slowed down and in a triple effect, and it dropped. Now, everything is broken, and it's not because the building actually was the one that sustained us, but it's that cooperation of ideas that changes, okay? The world went crazy, per se. Now, let's go back and try to think how we're going to redo the World Trade Center, and I've been talking about it forever. It was everywhere. We need to cooperate with each other on the World Trade Center, but in online. We don't have any portal for America, any portal for Europe, or any portal that a common portal for all of us that can come and trade, not online. It's not online trading. Let's start with the idea. you guys, let's say that somebody is manufacturing chairs in France, and he wants to sell those chairs. The fact of the matter is, he doesn't speak French, English. He speaks only French, and he needs to go online and look to sell it. So most of the time, the people that are in a very basic level of manufacturing, they don't have the ability to explore marketing elsewhere. So they're actually looking into the common denominator market that they have, which is limited because the resources are not there. Instead, when you talk about people like other nations, think what happens in China. And the Chinese come and they bombarded us with all their merchandise, and we never gave them back or sold them back goods in any level, well, little level, but they're still a big market. We can sell it to them. So what I'm saying is the rules needs to be even, Steven, for everybody. When you sell to America, you have a free zone for China, but when you go to China, you don't have it. And Donald Trump been talking about it, but it's not about only that country that it's so obvious to us that it's difficult to sell. You go anywhere in Europe, and they're actually starting to muscle their weight on the Brits with the exit of Britain from European Union. You just realize how sensitive is the market there that they actually can muscle it around. Instead of us, if we are building, again, let's recap, I want to have a center for all the world to come. It's a portal. It's easy. It's online. But we have rules of conduct. You go inside, and all the government agree that they have a trade agreement between them, and it's going to be, obvious, clear, transparent. Then you enter the portal of that country. That country will say, hello, how are you? What do you need to find? And I'm telling you, I want to see if you have some kind of bicycles. And you said, okay, bicycle manufacturing will be in that division. So you get all this. Department of Commerce will have a division of manufacturing. That manufacturing will have a segment where they sell bicycles. And those bicycle sellers or buyers will be there online, and they'll be already, regulated by their local Chamber of Commerce, which will be regulated by the government, that will regulate the portal to the international portal for everybody. You see, we need to come to the conclusion that to have a globalized world, we need to globalize it for real. And the fact that you are there in America and somebody else in Mexico and, China, Japan, and all the beloved countries of the world cannot connect if there is no connection. The chain needs to be created. And the chain is really easy to create. Needs a lot of funding from the United Nations, but if everybody will chip in, I'm sure we can create a beautiful, beautiful center when we can sell the tomorrow for the world, but easy, safe, legal, and controlled. And when we be busy, we'll have so much fun that maybe other people won't have so much time to start jeopardize it all. All right? So this is my idea. You can call me on orlyusa@aol.com anytime. That's my mail, orlyusa@aol.com, or a BBS radio station, and talk to us anytime, because we love you and we want to be a part of your life if you want us to come and bring some trustworthy world, godly faith. So I just remind you all, there is a God and it's not us. And I'll talk to you next week. God bless you all. Bye. Ciao, ciao.